Hi, and welcome to the How Not to Think podcast, the podcast that gets you thinking about your thinking, things like binary thinking, conventional wisdom, new ways of doing things across many different sectors. Today, I am delighted to have with me Dr. Sharon Grossman. She is the author of The 7E Solution to Burnout and is an emotional intelligence expert. She is a psychologist and a coach who really helps people deal with burnout and helps them work out what is important to them so that they can lead what we might call a more balanced life. Dr. Sharon, it's great to have you with us today.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Yes. And of course, this topic of burnout is very appropriate 2 years into a pandemic, not only because of the pandemic, but as people transition, or a lot of them transition to working from home too. So we'll get to that in the course of the podcast. But first of all, tell the listeners how you got to be doing what you are today.
Well, so I started out as a psychologist, as you mentioned, and I'd been doing that work for 20 years. And over the last several years, I decided that I really wanted to specialize in a particular area. And I thought, you know, who do I really love working with the most? And what I realized is, as a therapist, whoever walked in the door was my client. But if I wanted to be really more intentional as a coach and have a certain practice, I had to really think about the people that I enjoy working with and the ones that came up on my radar were the ones who are these super high achievers. And what I appreciate about them is how motivated they are, how into self-growth they might be. They want to understand. They're always hungry for information. They're hungry to optimize their life and the way that they work. They're trying to achieve a lot of things and really, you know, have success in their life. And sometimes as they're going through this journey, they end up maybe getting too focused in on work and falling into this trap, if you will, of not having the kind of life that they ultimately wanted and kind of losing sight of why they're so focused on work, right? Why they're so focused on achievement. And so in that process, they burn out. And I thought, you know, for 20 years, I've been teaching my therapy clients all of these skills, how to be more effective in the world. And this is the perfect opportunity for me to channel a lot of those skills to this audience and help them recover from burnout. And ultimately, really discover, like, what is, where did they get lost on that path? What is that relationship with themselves? And, as I've been going through this process of researching burnout and listening to what other people are saying and figuring out like what people, how people have been approaching this, it's been an interesting journey because I found initially when I started this a few years ago that a lot of the talk back then was really focused on organizational change and not so much on what the individual can do to help themselves. And I thought, you know, that's important, of course. But if you're that employee and you have to sit around and wait for your organization to change, who knows, A, if they're going to, and B, how long that's going to take. And that's so disempowering that I thought, you know, we really need to talk to the people and help them really feel more empowered to make those changes. And ultimately, when we put it all on the organization, what we're saying is it's all external. And as a psychologist, I know that that's not true. I know there's a lot of internal processes, and I'm sure we're going to talk about some of them here today. But really, so much of it is your programming, your personality, you know, what you're bringing to the table. And I think that's the part where people are often not clear that that's happening. So when they become burned out, sometimes they think, it's a great time for me to change jobs, or I got to change careers and completely transition. Or now what we're seeing is everybody's taking sabbaticals and they're leaving their jobs. And the truth of the matter is that that doesn't solve anything. And whatever you bring to your job right now, you're going to bring everywhere else you go. So it's really an opportunity. And I always say burnout can be your biggest wake-up call to look inside and see what it is that you need to work on so that you can change it for good and start to have the kind of life that you want to have.
Absolutely. Well said. And for the listeners, let's be clear on what a definition of burnout is.
Yes. So we're all familiar with the term stress. And even that, I think we don't necessarily have a good definition for. So I'd like to start with that because burnout is related to stress. So stress is about perception. And it's when we perceive the demands on us to exceed our resources or our ability to cope with the situation. And that's why you might see two people in the same situation, like you and your colleague at the same job doing the same role, one of you gets burned out and the other doesn't, because one might think, this is crazy. Like, there's no way I can do this. It's too much. Like, I already have so much going on. And the other one's like, yeah, I can handle this. This is okay. Right. So it's kind of like how we perceive those demands that's going to determine whether we become stressed or not. Now, over time, if that's your job and every day you're coming in and you're like, this is crazy, this is too much, I can't handle it, it becomes this chronic stressor in your life. And that's what burnout is when you become chronically stressed. And then we see there's multiple stages of burnout. So we see how it starts to deteriorate you from the inside out, right? We start to see the progression of that. And so I would say it's important to understand what burnout is, but that's such a simplified model of it because we've got these multiple stages of burnout. We also have different symptoms that you might be experiencing, which might be very different from somebody else's picture of burnout. And you might be bringing in different factors than someone else. So while we have this umbrella term of burnout, the presentation and therefore the treatment of it really is going to be very different depending on what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I like that distinction between stress and pressure. Stress is sort of overwhelming. Pressure is, well, you know, it's a challenge, but I know I can do it. And I think that's, personally, I think that's a useful distinction. And burnout is very common. You know, the area that I've spent some time looking at is burnout amongst physicians. Mm-hmm. The last time I looked, there was some data that suggested almost half of in practice physicians were experiencing some symptoms of burnout. And a lot of that seemed to be the sort of bureaucratic demands that were put on them and now spend 30% of their time filling out forms and doing this, which is not, I'm sure, why they signed up to be a doctor, you know, and then that puts pressure on their time with their patients and, you know, creates a big problem, I think. But of course, it applies across the spectrum, not just to physicians.
And to that point, I would say I've worked with enough physicians to know that while we hear that in the media, that that's really the reason, I also know that if you dig deeper, oftentimes that's not what's really going on, right? They might think that that's really stressful to them, but then you see differences between physicians that are getting their work done and going home on time and others who are staying at work longer and are really burning out. And you have to ask yourself, why is it that they have the same demands? And some people, it takes them hours and hours longer and they feel so much stress and they never go home, and other ones are able to knock it out, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's where a lot of the personal factors come in. So things like perfectionism, things like imposter syndrome, like we've got so much of that internal stuff that comes into play in terms of how you engage in your actual work. And until you're able to really conquer those inner demons, right? And really, like, burnout starts, if you look at, you know, Freudenberger's 12 stages of burnout, it starts from that compulsion to prove that you can do it, right? And so maybe you're in a demanding situation and you have this desire to prove yourself, which is totally normal. And that's essentially like why I love working with high achievers, because they are the kinds of people who push themselves to accomplish things, which is a beautiful thing. But when that desire becomes a compulsion, then you start that burnout process, right? Like, because it, you know, if we think about what is OCD, it's you're obsessing and there's the compulsive behaviors that you're taking, and it just becomes out of control, right? Like, you can't help yourself. Like, you're just tunnel vision. Like, I got to do this. I have to do this. You don't feel like you have the choice. You don't feel like there's freedom in that. You feel like you have to do it. There's so much internal pressure that you put on yourself for a variety of reasons, but that's what gets the ball rolling.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And that's interesting. I've just finished my book called Falling to Grace, The Art and Science of Redemption, which looks at how people deal with, you know, very difficult situations in their life. And how do you get out of those? How do you, what's the mindset you need? What are the behaviors you need? And one of the things that I came across there, which I thought was really interesting and maybe relevant here, a distinction between self-esteem and self-compassion. Mm. And that self-esteem is somewhat driven by external events, by being successful, by doing these things. Self-compassion is more about, you know, easing up on yourself and not being so hard on yourself that it reflects in everything that you do. And that seems to be maybe relevant in this discussion too.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, the more perfectionism you see on board, the less self-compassion you actually see. Mm-hmm. I often see the two as two sides of the same coin. Yep. And so when I work with perfectionists, I often work with them on increasing their self-compassion. And to your point, when you are in that state of, I have to prove myself, I have to do this, I have to get everything done, I can't go home until all this stuff is done, I have so much going on. If I go on vacation, I'll get really backed up, so I can't ever leave, you know. And I've talked to business owners and professionals who are in that state. As a matter of fact, so we just moved into a new home, and I hired an architect who I love working with. He's a fabulous guy. He's like so burned out. And he's telling me, I haven't taken a vacation for over 2 years, right? And this is what happens as business owners. You feel like everybody else is an employee, so you have to give them their, like, obviously you can't tell people that work for you that they can't go on vacation ever, right? But you can certainly do that for yourself. And so he's letting everybody go home for the holidays, and he's the one showing up to work every day and doing all the things. And listen, like, at some point, if you can't figure out a system for your business, I mean, it is inevitable that you're going to burn out, because we only have so much to give. And then at some point, if we're not replenishing the energy, then you are going to run out.
Yeah. And it's interesting, the sort of cultural narrative seems to be, you may not agree with this, but the cultural narrative seems to be that to be successful, you know, you've got to do those things. You've got to take the responsibility for everything. You've got to do it all yourself. You got to be strong. And I think that's really unhelpful, to be honest. Perhaps you don't see that's the narrative, but it's certainly one of the narratives about being successful. You got to have all these attributes, and certainly things like self-compassion is hardly ever mentioned.
Yeah, and I think that's why you often see people who are burned out, that their life looks amazing on the outside because they have nailed it. They are so good at getting things done. But like, this is where the wake up call comes in, right? Yep. Getting things done maybe makes you some money and gives you the title and all that kind of stuff, but it doesn't say anything about your health. It doesn't say anything about your mental health. It doesn't say anything about your relationships. So while on the outside, it might look amazing, like, oh my God, they have the cars and the house and, you know, the kids and the private school and all these things, and, you know, they go on vacations, maybe, maybe not, right? Depending on how they're managing their time. If they're so burned out, they're going to feel constant stress. And what we see most commonly is that they're not sleeping. So now they have to run on adrenaline, and that does a whole number of things to your body. And it really starts to run you ragged. And then we get into this wired, you know, but tired kind of situation where you can't focus. And so eventually what's going to happen is your performance is going to decline. And then we get into real trouble, because if you have people who have that compulsion to prove themselves, and now they, no matter what they do, they cannot accomplish the same things they used to be able to do. Now we get into a whole set of meaning of what does it mean about me if I can't accomplish it? If my entire self-image, self-worth, self-esteem is wrapped around this notion of productivity and accomplishment, and I can no longer do that, like I can barely get out of bed, then I am a failure. I am a loser. What is the point? We get into depression, and eventually you see people getting really suicidal, right? Because like there is no more purpose, no more meaning in life. And so it's very much a slippery slope, and it all goes back to your mind. So I love that your podcast is all about like how not to think, right? Because so much of it comes back to that. It comes back to this notion of what is your brain kind of coming up with? What is that story? And when I work with people, I help them tease that apart and see that so much of their angst, of their dissatisfaction, of their resentment, of their sadness, like all of it comes back to a thought, a belief, you know, some sort of programming. If we can figure out what that is and change it, there's a cascade effect that happens. It changes how you feel. It changes how you behave, but it's going to take time to really tease that out, to change it, and to recover. And so I come on these shows to give people a sense of hope that they can recover, that it doesn't have to be this hard, and that they can live the life that they want to live. But you have to do something different than what you're currently doing.
Yeah. And I had a great experience about that many years ago when I was still in the UK and working in a private hospital. And one day, a fairly well-known person in the sort of self-help world was admitted to the hospital with serious depression. Ended up being his therapist. And his problem was, he's a great guy, tremendously successful. I don't think he'd ever had a setback in his life. And now here he was in his 40s and something bad had just happened. First of all, he didn't know how to deal with it, one. But secondly, he was beating himself up so badly that he'd gone into this deep depression. And I'm sure you've seen that in your client. That's what you're trying to prevent happening with your clients. Because again, the mindset of super achievers can be, and part of the reason they're super achievers is they drive, 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 and they lose that perspective and take it all on themselves when it's not working.
And you mentioned earlier about this culture that we're in. And I think part of that culture is not just to achieve, but also that if you admit that you're not doing well, that you are weak, that you are failing. And so people don't want to step forward and say, I need help. I'm not doing well. I need support. I need resources. Like that's people feel like, and it really is this like double-edged sword. Like you can't really get what you need. So people aren't getting their needs met and they are pushing themselves to the brink. And that is a total recipe for disaster. Right. So, and I think what I love about your story is that even somebody like that, who is a total mind guru, was falling into that trap. And that just shows you that if like the experts in the field are struggling, of course you are going to be struggling as well. Like that should just be a part of the human experience. Like we're all going to have ups and downs. There's nothing shameful about it. And the best thing you can do for yourself is say, okay, this is me just going through what we all go through at some point. This is part of mm-hmm. self-compassion, right? That mm-hmm. common Absolutely. Humanity piece. Mm-hmm. And what can I do to help myself so I can get back on track rather than keep pushing and thinking that that eventually will translate into more success, because it's not, it's only going to bring you further in, you know? Right. So I love that idea that even the best of us sometimes deal with life right. and we need help and we go to therapy and we get coaches and, you know, exactly. we need to take care of ourselves. So whatever that means for you, wherever you are in your journey, like taking the shame out of it and saying, okay, this is just part of being human.
Absolutely.
That's self-compassion. Because I think sometimes, you know, we throw around these terms and people aren't like, what does sure it mean to I have mean. Self-compassion, you know? Yeah. So self-compassion is partly the self-talk, right? How kind you are in how you speak to yourself. And rather than beating yourself up, you say, oh, you know, at least I tried, didn't go as well as I would have liked, but, you know, kudos to me for even trying. And, you know, my perfectionistic clients are like, are you kidding me? Like, you know, there's always that fear, I think, behind self-compassion. There's always that fear of applying it because people, especially these high achievers, they think if I say these things to myself, I will become lazy. I won't push myself anymore. I won't accomplish things. I'm going to just, and I'm like, listen, you're not the kind of person who's going to sit on your laurels no matter what. Right. So you have two choices. Like you can keep going with like cracking the whip and thinking like that's going to get you where you want to go, or you can have a more gentle approach, mm-hmm. more loving approach to yourself mm-hmm. that says, okay, let's set some goals. Let's even stretch, right? Let's like push ourselves a little bit, but let's also have some things in the mix where we're making sure we recover our energy, that we're taking care of ourselves, that we're celebrating our wins, right? Like making sure you're taking care of your mental health, your physical health, all of it is going to help you actually be a higher performer.
Right? Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think that we missed that piece.
Yes, absolutely. Professor Neff, who's done some work on self-compassion, as you may know, she has a good line, which is, you know, all of us want to have a great friend who has our best interests and at heart and, you know, is very consoling and supportive. We need to be that friend to ourselves too.
Yeah.
And it's a great line, I think. And that's what self-compassion is. It's not letting yourself off the hook. It's looking at it realistically and putting it in the context of what is possible for human beings, right? We've only got a certain amount of energy. We've only got, we've got some limited resources. We may think we're great, but the resources are limited. There's only so much you can do. And to recognize that and give yourself a break to recognize it, I think is very, very important. And I think that's, again, part of what self-compassion is.
Exactly. Yeah. And I often take my clients through an exercise when they have a hard time befriending themselves. And I say, you know, think of like somebody who you're very close to, like a best friend or somebody you care so deeply about. And imagine that they're going through your current struggle. What would you say to them? And then they're often able to tap into compassion for others, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. oftentimes we see that, right? When self-compassion is lacking, usually they're able to have compassion when it's somebody else, but they can't apply it to themselves. But that's mm-hmm. a place to start of like just tapping into what would compassion actually look like? Sometimes if they're not able to access self-compassion, I ask them to think about somebody that they care very much about. And if that person was in your shoes, experiencing the same hardships that you're currently experiencing, what would you say to them? And that's when they're able to really find the words that are comforting, that are kind, that are gentle, that are loving. And then I say, how can you now apply that to yourself, right? You're able to do it for somebody else. why not say that to yourself, right? Think about like why you would choose those words for a friend. And I said, you know, if you said what you say to yourself, to your friends, you would have no friends.
Yeah, that's, you know? Right. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Yes, that's so true. And it's interesting when people hit difficulties, either self-made or otherwise, the two most common things seem to be either denied altogether, or anger and sort of an angry response. And finding that balance in the middle between that was where the self-compassion comes in is very important, but you don't see it that often. You don't see it that often. People are either beat themselves up horribly or deny it and project their anger onto everyone else.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, well, we know that denial is part of the burnout process, actually. So we're starting to see that the person, you know, we said they start with that compulsion to prove themselves. They're constantly trying to work harder and harder in order to make their goals come to fruition. And in that process, they start to neglect themselves, right? They put off simple pleasures. They're working longer hours. Maybe they're staying later at work. They're taking work home. They're working on weekends. They start to feel, obviously, when we're putting a lot of energy into something and we're not replenishing that energy, we start to feel this breakdown happening. So they start to feel fatigue, trouble sleeping. They can't stop thinking about work. And in order to deal with that, they might get into more what we call escapist kind of activities where they're drinking or they're just grabbing some like sugary snacks or they're shopping just to relieve some stress, right? They're doing mm-hmm. all these things that are temporarily helpful, you know, but then have long-term consequences. And as they start to A, neglect their real needs and then engage in these kinds of activities over time, the problem becomes bigger and people might start saying things like, you know, I noticed that you're working too much or that you look really tired and maybe this is a problem. Maybe we should like think about this. Maybe you should see somebody like, you know, and the more people say that, the more they kind of dig their heels in and they try even harder. So there's a lot of denial about this isn't really a problem. I just need to finish this project. I just need to get through this process. I just need to finish the things on my list. It's going to be fine after I get to the end of this. And so there's constantly that drive and we're pushing. And we think that we've got it all under control. And that's where a lot of the denial is showing up. And I think that as you start to notice how it makes you feel and how empty you feel on the inside and how everything's falling apart in terms of your health and your mental health and your relationships, then the resentment comes in. And then you're like, it's because of my job. You know, they're the ones who are putting all this stuff on me. If it wasn't for them, then I'd have a life, you know? And I think there's that disconnect between like, yes, there might be some truth to that. Like your job is requiring you to do certain things, right? But it's like, how much of your own stuff are you bringing into that that you might not be aware of that is now causing all this resentment to be pointed at something external because that makes it more tangible, yep. Right? So it's understandable why we do that. It's not necessarily helpful because then we don't have control over those things.
Right. And control is one of the issues here, big time, because the reality is, I think most of us, probably all of us, don't have as much control over life as we think. We have certain things that we do. And for me, you know, it's about resilience and adaptation. That's the skill you need, that when things come up, you have the ability to adapt. You know, whatever that means, it doesn't mean working 24/7 for a year. It means adapting, because that I don't think would be an effective adaptation. But recognizing that situations need slightly different solutions, they're all different, and we need to adapt to them appropriately. And again, I think that's not fully understood or actually manifested by many people.
Well, if you think about, you know, your 12-step programs, what is step one? Right? It's always about like getting over the denial and saying, listen, I have a problem. Absolutely. I need help.
Absolutely.
And I think until we get to that point with burnout where we say, I'm burned out, I realize it, I want to stop it, I want to change my results, I want to feel better, I'm going to do something about it. Until we get to that point, nothing's going to change.
That's
if we're going to, if going to like focus on blaming external factors, if we're going to, you know, take sabbaticals and like not look at our issues, and we're going to jump around from job to job, we're never going to actually deal with the root problem. Then we're going to keep manifesting the same solutions. I actually just worked with a client who was telling me that over the last several years, she was jumping around from job to job and really feeling resentful about her industry. She's like, why should I focus on my mind? Why should I like have to do the work on myself when it's them?
Right. Yeah.
And what I found so fascinating about that, right, is like, yes, there's the little bit of that denial, right? But she also came to me after hearing me on a podcast. So I was like, clearly you're recognizing there's some burnout, and clearly you're recognizing that you need some help. So there was some, you know, some optimism there about that it's possible to do something about it. I think it's just until we attribute it to the right causes, then we don't really stand a chance in helping ourselves, because, you know, I think it can be scary for people, especially for us perfectionists who are like trying to be like perfect and undamaged goods and all these things. It's like, if I admit that there's something wrong, that I'm contributing to this problem, that it's about the way I think or my belief system or something else, then, you know, that maybe that's really scary. It's like damaging my whole perfectionistic idea of what I should be.
Right.
And I think if you have those shoulds to begin with, that's the start of a conversation.
No question about that. And acceptance is the massive key first step. Not the only step, but certainly the first one. You know, in my career as a psychologist, every felon that I came across, you know, during the course of a long career, you come across a lot of them, absolutely were blaming somebody else. Oh, yeah, my lawyer or the judge or the jury or my the other guys I robbed the bank with or whatever it was. It was never, I've got to take some responsibility for it and accept where I'm at. You know, and that's what my book is based around. You have to do that. You can continue in denial. You'll go down a rabbit hole. It's going to get worse. And that's hard for people to do. Again, in a culture which suggests that somehow is weakness, where in fact it isn't, it's strength.
Exactly. You know? And I think we talk a lot about grit and tenacity, which I think high achievers like those words, because it's like, I'm going to be strong. I'm going to get more work done. I'm going to push myself. And I'm like, we're kind of losing sight of what this is supposed to mean. It also means that you're internally strong to admit when you've failed, when you've caused a problem, when you've made a mistake. And we're so afraid of admitting those things because we're worrying that it's going to taint our image, that people aren't going to respect us as much. And the truth of the matter is, the more vulnerable we are, the more responsibility we take for things, the more people admire us.
Absolutely. You're exactly right. That's exactly right. And instead of, well, I'm not going to tell anyone, don't tell anyone. No, you know, you should be absolutely upfront and honest with that. And in fact, my book explains my situation where I very briefly got involved with a former client and had a very brief consensual sexual relationship with. It ended up with me losing my license and it being all over the papers and all of that. And, you know, I went through this. You know, fortunately, I was able to say to myself, you know, after about a few weeks of denial and, you know, the board made a terrible decision and what have you, to say, stop, own up, you know, accept it, be honest about it, and look at how do you make this the best it can be, which I have done over the last 9 years. And, you know, that was very, very enlightening for me. And interestingly enough, to your point, when I say to people and I tell them this, their biggest response is, thank you so much for being honest, because people do not expect people to share their dirty laundry. They don't.
Exactly.
But I see it as a sign of acceptance. In the same way, I had a guy on my podcast a few months ago called Dr. Bob Moore, trauma. He was talking about trauma and how you really have to process the trauma, and, you know, which I agree with. And he came up with an interesting line. He said, when I see somebody talking about their trauma and they're still crying about it, I know they haven't really resolved it. Mm-hmm. And in the same way, if you can talk about what you did honestly, authentically, and what have you, okay, you've accepted it. You've accepted that responsibility, and then you can move on.
You know, and if you're familiar with Seth Godin, he recently put out something which I thought was really cool. It was like a matrix and had these four quadrants, and it was basically the intersection between control and responsibility. And basically what he was saying, if you want to be a leader, you have to be high in control and high in responsibility. And I think we're too focused on the control and too little focused on the responsibility, which leaves us to be victims and martyrs and all of these things. And I think that there is that opportunity for us to think about, what am I not taking responsibility for? What can I have power over, right? What can I do about the situation if I first take the responsibility? So bringing it back to burnout, if you take the responsibility for the fact that you're the one who has that perfectionistic tendency and you're the one who is deciding to stay longer at work, like nobody's forcing you to spend all these extra hours, or you're the one who's taking work home because you're on Facebook and you're wasting time during the day, and that's why it's taking you longer to get your work done. When you start to take responsibility for that, then we can start to say, how can you take control over the situation? And now that you have high responsibility, we can look at what you can do from that place of empowerment to get back control. So if, for instance, you're distracted, now that you've taken responsibility for that, we can focus on how can you have less distractions, be more focused, get things done more quickly. Now you have high control and high responsibility. But I think really often we don't think about that piece of what can I do to help myself? And in order to even get to that question, we first have to admit that we're contributing to the problem.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And again, you know, people, one of the thinking errors, since we're talking about how not to think, is binary thinking. And so people have a really difficult time in thinking about things in a proportionate way, rather than it's this or it's that. You know, either I'm a success by working this or I'm a failure. Either, you know, I'm a great guy or I'm an idiot. Yes. And, you know, I know that's a function of how our brain works, but it is a major problem when it comes to these things, where you're getting down to much finer definitions of what things mean. So people aren't sort of lumping themselves in this category, which is way too, too inclusive and too broad. It isn't just that, you know, just like, hey, all those felons I spoke to probably, you know, might have a legitimate case in their argument, but that doesn't mean they didn't do anything, you know, criminal or wrong, right? So binary thinking is a major problem.
Yeah, I often see that is essentially the mindset of a perfectionist. It's all or nothing. It's black or white. And I always say to them, you know, we want to get into the gray zone. So I want you to start to think about what else is possible. Let's open it up. And sometimes it's hard for them to do that. And I'll have to make some suggestions. I'm like, let's consider this. And now that you've heard something that isn't black or white, I want you to come up with additional statements that are similar to that. Like, let's really open this up and think about it from other standpoints. Like, what else can you say that, like, let's massage it a little bit so that it doesn't feel so rigid. You know, it's like, and we're so punitive and we're so hard on ourselves. So obviously there's a reason why we do this. And you're right, there is that tendency of the brain to do that. But I think there's also some schema or core belief that we have from early life experiences that have made us become that way even more so. So even though all of our brains are, we have that tendency to think so black and white, I think some people really use that a lot more than others because they feel that compulsion to be perfect because of something that they're compensating for from early life experiences. So the more you understand about yourself, the more you can start to make some changes, the easier life is going to feel. And ultimately, you can feel happy and satisfied. And that's really the point. And if we've gotten away from the point and we're always just focused on, you know, productivity and accomplishment and money and things like that, then you're lost.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, when I wrote, "I Think Therefore I'm Wrong," as I looked at that, it was pretty clear to me that, you know, all the wise people of the past who talked about virtues were right. We're right. That wisdom is based on virtue. And a lot of the things that we're talking about are based on virtue, like having humility. Mm-hmm. I think humility is really important. Yeah, I like Rick Warren's quote, humility isn't thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. you know, but you look at these things, which again tend to be devalued in society, right? Humility, I don't think, if you said, you know, is it good to be humble? I think a lot of people would say, probably certainly the people that you might work with, would say, what? Why would I do that? and so I think that's another issue. And it does go back to, you know, again, in this book that I've written, how to move forward. It's focus on meaning and purpose, not the money. Okay. That's where the happiness comes from, as we know from research. It doesn't mean money is a bad thing. Ideally, you can find something that is meaningful and purposeful to you that is profitable, but don't put money before meaning in the long term.
Well, I think that there's probably different ways that people can go about it. So there isn't one right way.
Correct.
But ultimately, what I find is that you need to have some version of balance in your life, that you're not putting all of your eggs into one basket, which is your work, that you have space in your life for, you know, your health and for your relationships and for yourself. And do it however makes sense for you. If you want to do a job that you don't love, as long as you're finding kind of satisfaction outside of work, if that works for you, great. Ultimately, it's really about finding what works for you. And like you said, you've got to find purpose in some place. If it's not at work, then maybe you're doing some volunteer work. Maybe you have some hobby that you engage in outside of work. Maybe it's your relationships. Maybe you play some sports. I mean, something, but life has to have some meaning. And I think ultimately the way that you can determine whether you're on track or not is you can ask yourself, if I were on my deathbed right now, what would I regret, right? Or would I be like, yes, you did it right. You have like amazing experiences and people are going to show up to your funeral and say what a wonderful person you are. Or, you know, your kids are going to show up and say like, mommy was never there. Daddy was always working. I didn't really know my parent. Like, what are people going to say, right? And that's really the biggest thing that people regret at the end of the day, is how they didn't show up for their relationships, and that their work either didn't have meaning or that they didn't give themselves permission to experience happiness. I think that's one of the biggest things too, Howard, is that oftentimes we don't allow ourselves to feel happy because we have this core belief that we're a bad person, that we don't deserve it.
Yep.
We have all of these notions in our brain. And I think like this is such a great opportunity if you're hearing this to do some deeper digging into where does that come from? Is that even serving you? Is it true? And if you want to change it, to start doing work on that. So that's part of like, I think what I've seen super helpful with my patients, my clients, is to help them dig that stuff out, clean it up. And it makes such a tremendous difference in how they approach their life and how they feel.
Yeah, I have this vision of you working with these sort of high level perfectionist people with no time for anyone else. And you say, well, let's make an appointment. And they say, well, how's 5 o'clock on Sunday morning?
As a matter of fact, I just had a session, like one of my breakthrough sessions with a potential client. And he's one of these guys that works just endless amounts of hours, which is part of the reason he's burned out and he's calling me. So it's kind of ironic when we're actually trying to schedule. And he's like, well, can you do like really late at night, or can we do like on the weekend? And I said, listen, I understand that you're very busy. And I think this is part of your exercise, is to find some time for yourself in the middle of the day. I think that's part of your issue. And if you can carve that out for our session, I think that would be a really good first step for you to make this change in your life, right? And it's once a week. It's not like it's every day,
but that
can be so challenging for some people. Mm-hmm. And so then he's trying to think, well, maybe I'll wake up extra early. And because you're 3 hours ahead, like it'll work out for you. And then, you know, and I'm like, listen, you got to look at your schedule and figure this out. But at the end of the day, I think this is very telling about how you think about your time, which is really our most valuable resource. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if you can't find any time for yourself, even when you're burned out, even when you're struggling, then we've got a lot of work to do.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
You know, like with all the compassion in the world, like from a very loving place, like just really highlighting, mm-hmm. like there's work to do, right? So like your relationship with yourself is really suffering.
So what did you do? Book a date 4 months out? Or no, you don't have to answer that. You also have a book, right? Tell us a little bit about the book and where people can get it.
Yeah. So my book is called The 7E Solution to Burnout. It's available on Amazon and in other online marketplaces. And what I've done is I've taken a lot of the skills that I've been teaching for 20 years and put it into a systematic step-by-step process for people. So I think this is really good for people who are a little bit burned out and they still have the bandwidth to take themselves through the exercises. So it comes with a workbook and you can really read one section at a time, reflect on how that really relates to your life and your current circumstances, because it's always about bringing it back and really learning the skills, applying it in the workplace, in your life, and seeing how over time things are starting to kind of add up, right? What I've also found is that when people are further along in their burnout, they just don't have the bandwidth to coach themselves. Mm-hmm. And so then that's where I decided I'm going to build a program that really does take you through the exact same 7-step solution, but I'm going to work with you so you don't have to do it alone. Mm-hmm. And that's where we are going to meet weekly, and you've got the accountability built in, and you've got like the real coaching that goes into what's happening currently in your life, which you don't get when you're really doing it on your own. So, you know, I think it's a very personal decision for people if they want to learn the skills on their own and take themselves through that journey, or if they want more handholding, more accountability. But it's good to have options. So,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You can find the book on Amazon or on my website, and it's a good place to start.
And your website is drsharongrossman.com, right?
Yes.
Okay. And it sounds like you work remotely too, right? So
I only work remotely.
Okay. Right. Yes. Good. Yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you so much. This has been awesome. And like I say to many of my guests, we got to do it again sometime. Very helpful. Great stuff. Keep up the great work.
Thank you so much, Howard. And I do want to just leave people with a couple of additional burnout resources. So if you are curious how you're doing, I've got a burnout checklist you can download for free from my website. So you go to drsharongrossman.com/burnout checklist. And that's a great place for you to kind of check in with yourself. And then also, if you want to hear other people's stories, because as I mentioned, burnout manifests so differently for each of us. I like to highlight people's stories and their contributing factors so that you can find somebody's profile that really matches your own and then listen to what's helped them so that maybe those are some things that you can use for your own recovery. Then I've actually got a podcast called Decode Your Burnout, where you can find all of those stories that people are sharing and the tips that have helped them.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Great source of information for many people who are able to think, are struggling, but don't realize it or Absolutely. Don't realize what's going on and that there's a way of managing it. So awesome. Thank you so much again for your time. And thank you. Awesome stuff.
Thank you.